We're holding Profess Amadeus three lines from the bottom. We started learning yesterday about the Minerda, all about the Minerda, and about, in particular, the last thing we learned is about the number of decorations that were on it. We know the Torah says we have to be in Kaftorim and Trofim, cup-shaped decorations, knobs, and flowers, and we talked about how many there are. So the Gemara says, Bishlema Dvim Esrim Ashlaim. I understand where we get that there are 22 cups. And again, we don't mean the cups of the Minerda where they actually, we don't mean the cups where they actually place the oil. These are decorative cups. And in fact, in the Rambam's famous diagram, he draws them upside down, so clearly they're not holding oil in them. Anyway, we know there were 22 as follows. The Pesach says, in the Minerda, meaning in the central stem of the Minerda, the body of the Minerda, the central stem, there were four cups. And the Pesach says, the Pesach says, on each of the stem, on each of the branches, there were three cups decorated with an almond pattern on each branch, and there was a knob and there was a flower. And so it was for each of the branches. So therefore, so we figure it out. Our body does, so for four on the central stem, were 20 sre de panim, and 18 on the branches, 3 times 6. And there's your 22 greed. Kaftorim nami achados. So I understand how we know that there are 11 kaftorim, 11 knobs, because kaftorim, because you have two on the stem itself, because the pasuk says kafkereha, it's knobs, so that means that it itself, the central stem, had two. The shisha dekanim, then you have 6, one each on the branches, because again you have one each branch. As it said, we just quoted the pasuk shlosh gvim and kafter v'ferach. So far you're up to 8. The kafter, and then you have one knob in each place where the kanim come out of, because the pasuk says that under each, where each pair of kanim come, where each pair of branches comes out of the central stem, you have a knob over there. So hochad sar, there's your 11. Ela prochem tisha, but we're saying there are nine flower decorations. Minola, where do we get that from? On the face of it, prochem shredida, we have two on the central stem because the pasuk says again, it says ufrocheha, and its flowers, which indicates at least two. The shisha dekanim, one each on the 6 branches. Tmani Abu, that's only 8. Where's the 9th one? The answer is Amar of Shaman, still, because the pasuk says in Vahaloisa, where it mentions the Minerda again, ad yirecha, ad pircha mikrehi, down to its base and down to its flower, it was mikra, it was made out of one piece. So therefore, the Torah is telling you that there's one more flower directly above the base. So there's your 9 flowers. In the simple sense, it actually explains that ad yirecha ad pircha means everything in it was made from one piece, from the biggest thing, the yirecha, which is the largest single component of the Minerda, down to the pircha, which is the smallest, but the Gemara is also darshaning that it means that there was an actual perach, that there was an actual flower directly above the base. The Gemara continues, Omar, and as we talked about yesterday, Rabbi Nachaye brings an interesting idea that each of these numbers corresponds to the beginning, to the first pasuk of each one, the 5 chumashim. So the Gemara says, Omar, Rav, Goyva Shamanerda Tisha Tfachim. The height of the Minerda, says Rav, was 9 Tfachim. Now, we said before, 18. Eisved of Shini Ba'ashi, any Eisved of Shini Ba'achia Barav, so Rav Shini Ba'achia, says to Rav, Rav Shini Ba'achia was actually Rav's own grandson. He asks him, we learn in the Mishnah, Eben Hoysa Lifnei Minerda, there was a stone in front of the Minerda, Uvosh Sholosh Milos, and there were 3 steps on it, Shalal, Akoin Omid, Umeitav Ashaneris. The Kohen would stand on top of that when he's preparing the lamps of the Minerda, when he's putting in new wicks and oil and trimming them and whatever. Now, if the Minerda was 18 tefachim tall, we understand why that would have been necessary. We talked about yesterday that 18 tefachim, according to one way of looking at it, is the height of a person. So therefore, he wouldn't really be able to see into the cups well to clean him out unless he has something to stand on top of. But if the Minerda is only 9 tefachim tall, he'd easily be able to see into it. What does he need steps in front of it for? And we know that there were steps. First of all, it's a Mishnah, but second of all, we actually learn from the pasuk Baha Loischa Saneris. One of the meanings of Baha Loischa is that you have to go up steps in order to light the Minerah. It signifies the point that when you're going to be enlightening another Yid in Yiddishkeit, you have to work on yourself as well and make yourself higher, etc. There's a lot of symbolism in it, of course. The Rav says, Shimi at. Oh, you shimmy, meaning you're the great Talmud Chacham, and you're asking such a question. I think some of the Foshim explain that it means Pashut that Rav was old and he couldn't always see clearly. So it means he's asking literally, are you shimmy? Anyway, he says, Kika Amina, what I'm saying when I say the menorah is 9 tefachim tall, misfas kanim olamayla. I mean, from where the branches start branching out in the menorah and going up to there, because the way we calculated it before, the whole calculation we have is you have 9 tefachim, you have the base itself. There's three, the base itself, together with the flowers, 3 tefachim, 2 tefachim of empty space. So far that's 5. Then the griya kaf of a ferach, the decoration over there where you had the three, where you, a place over there where you had the three decorations of ferach, two more tefachim blank. And then you start having the knobs and you start having the branches go up from there. So from there to the top is 9 tefachim. One point you see that therefore is that the branches don't come out from the middle of the knob as is commonly drawn, because then you would really have it would be 9.5 tefachim. They actually come out from on top of the knob, which is actually in the Maaseh, the Sefer Maaseh Choshev points that out and says that's what the pasuk means when it says that there's a knob under tachas each pair of branches. We usually think of it means tachas, in other words, where the branches start out, then you have a knob over there. But now we're saying that no, it means there's the knob, and then above it, the branches start branching out. So therefore, from there to the top is indeed 9 tefachim. The whole thing is 18 tefachim. Okay. Let's talk about the gold that they used for the menorah. We learned yesterday that the menorah is supposed to be made out of gold, and we said if they don't have gold, then they can make it out of other metals, and we talk about what other materials it can be made out of. The pasuk says in Divrei Hayamim, so in Sefer Melachim, it describes how Shlomo built the first base of the Mikdash. In Divrei Hayamim, it tells it over with some variations, and it goes into more details about some of the kelim. So it mentions that he made the menorahs. Actually, we're going to learn later on in the Masechta that in the first base of Mikdash, there were 11 menorahs. There was the original menorah that Moshe Rabbeinu had made, that was made under Moshe Rabbeinu's direction, as we'll see in the Gemara soon, how it was made, and then there were 10 more. Similarly with Shulchanos, there were also 10 extra. We'll learn later in the Masechta all about that, and we'll learn why they had those. Anyway, the pasuk says that they made them all exact. Even the flower decorations and the lamps and the tweezers that you use to take out the old wicks and whatever, zahav is all made out of gold. It was michlois gold. So the Gemara says, my mishlois zahav. What exactly does that mean? The simple meaning is, it means completely gold, but it's an unusual word. So, Amar Rav Ami, shekilat l'chol zahav shosogu to shloimah, means that making those menorahs used up all of the zahav sogu that shloimah had. The Gemara explains in Yuma, there are different grades and qualities of gold, and one of the best is called zahav sogu, which literally means closed gold. Rashi says the Gemara in Yuma explains that it's called that because when somebody opens up a store to sell that kind of gold, everybody else who's selling gold closes their stores because they know nobody's going to be interested in their inferior quality gold when there's such high quality gold being sold. So it used up all of his gold. Why? Shlomo, as we're saying, made 10 menorahs. Again, it was the one originally left over from the Mishkan, and then there's 10 more. Each one, they began with 1,000 kikar of gold. Now, the menorah itself is supposed to be one kikar, and each menorah was each of the extra menorahs that Shlomo was going to make are also going to be one kikar. But they start off with 1,000 of not such pure gold. They put that gold 1,000 times into the furnace to refine it again and again. They had midu al kikar, and they got it down to one kikar. So, in other words, they refined it over and over each time. Some of the baser metals that are mixed into it burnt off or separated out, because gold has a higher melting point than most other metals, and therefore, after 1,000 times, they got it down to one kikar. Rashi explains that it means, in other words, each time they refined it, one kikar was missing from the mass. And we know now, and then that would be, in other words, that kikar would be composed of baser metals. Masha argues and says that it doesn't really work. What's the logic that, for example, so what? The first time you put in 1,000 and it takes out only 100, and the 999th time you put in 2 and it comes out with 1, it's not logical. So Masha says, no, what it means is each time it was the same proportion. that got burnt off. And if you calculate it mathematically, it comes out, and it was the first time it burnt off a certain percentage of what was there. The second time it burnt off the same percentage, but it's a smaller amount, because now you have less in the furnace, and so on and so forth, until the 1,000th time it's burning off very little, but that gets it down to exactly a tipper. Mathematically, you work it out, it comes out to about 0.7%, about 7,000th would be burnt off every time. So therefore, so that used up all the Zohar Sagur, because to begin with, they began with very high quality gold, and now they burnt so much of it off, and all that's left is the one kicker of the ultra pure gold, and that's what for each of these 10 menorahs, and so that used up all the Zohar Sagur. So the Gemara says, Eni, is that so? You're telling me they used up all of Shlomo's gold? But Hakasim, the Gemara is assuming that the Zohar Sagur is the same. The Gemara is assuming for this purpose that it doesn't just mean it used up all the Zohar Sagur, that it means it used up all the gold, period. So the Gemara says, "V'chsiv." The pasuk says, "V'chol klei mashka, v'chol klei mashka, melech shlomo zahavs." All of the utensils for drinking, all the cups that were used for drinking in Shlomo's palace were made out of gold. "V'chol klei beis yar halavonin zahav sagur," and all of the kelim that were used in the beis yar halavonin, which is a summer palace that Shlomo built for himself in Yerushalayim, zahav sagur, are made of zahav sagur. In Kesef Nechta, they made Shlomo Lema'uma, silver wasn't considered worth anything in Shlomo's times. So you see, in other words, because there was so much gold that nobody paid any attention to silver. So you see that there was still lots of gold. And the answer is Zohar Sagur coming. And what we mean is making the menorahs used up the Zohar Sagur that Shlomo had, but there was still plenty of other gold. That doesn't really explain how the Pasuk is saying that the Kalim and the base Yair HaLevonin are made of Zohar Sagur. One possibility is the Gemara actually sometimes mentions that Levonin thinks of the Beis Hamikdash, so it may actually mean that even though base Yair HaLevonin on the face of it means Shlomo's summer palace, which is described in the Pesukim over there, maybe the Gemara is understanding that it's actually hinting at the Beis Hamikdash itself. Or maybe it means that afterwards he got a hold of more Zohar Sagur. So the point of this is, the lesson of this is, in other words, that Torah, it has to be ultra pure, that you have to refine and go over and over and over Torah in order to get it, because the menorah, more than anything else, more than any of the other kelim, represents the Torah, the light of Torah, and therefore it has to be ultra pure and ultra refined, and the person himself who's learning it must have to make sure to purify and refine his midas to the nth degree. So the Gemara says, "Mechalas kula hai." So you're telling me when you're refining gold that much of it goes missing each time. You're saying whether like Rashi a whole kicker every time, or whether like Marsha the first time, for example, you have almost 7 kikrim out of 1,000 would be missing, and then proportionally less each time. Does it really lose that much? Well, Tanya, we learn in a brayser of Yosef of Yehoshua. Maisa, it once happened, for who's the menorah Beis Hamikdash, Yisera, Al Shal Moshe, the dinner Zahav Kudakiyoni. It happened once that the menorah in the Beis Hamikdash weighed more than the one of Moshe. In other words, again, the one of Moshe was exactly a kicker. Now, at this point, the one in the Beis Hamikdash, they discovered that it weighs a tiny bit more than Moshe's, the Mishkal dinner Zahav Kudakiyoni. It was too much by the weight of one gold Kudakiyoni dinner. Kudakiyoni, it actually just says the name of the name of a coin. It might be named after the place where it came from. It might be named after the king or emperor who minted it. Whatever the case, it's not a large amount. We're talking one gold coin. But it's over a kicker, and they need to get it to exactly a kicker. So what they did is they took that menorah and melted it down and put it through a refining process 80 times. Then we do our kicker, and then they got it down to a kicker. So you see that each time it only burns off a tiny little bit of impurities. So it took 80 times to get it down by one dinner. How is it with Shlomo's ones were saying that each time it burned off a lot more? And the answer is given to koi koi. The answer is once it was already refined in Shlomo's times, and now it was already established as a kicker, so now it's basically established. Basically, it is all pure gold. Now, at this point, there's very, very little impurities in it left. So now you're going to do it another 80 times, then, yeah, all you're going to get out is a tiny little bit of impurities that were left. But to begin with, when you start with average quality gold, then yes, you're going to have to refine it 1,000 times, and each time it's going to lose a relatively large amount of its mass, because you have a lot more base metals and things mixed into it. Okay. The pasuk describes, and then the Torah describes lighting the menorah in a few different places. It mentions it briefly in Parshas Tisava. It mentions it in Emor, and it mentions it in Baal Osfa. So in Emor, it mentions that you have to bring shemen zayis up, and you have to light the menorah. You have to light the candles al hamenorah hatahorim on the pure menorah. So what does that mean? Shiyodim Asem and Mokum Tara means the design of the menorah came down from a place of purity, from Shemayim. Okay. As the Gemara is going to say soon, that Hashem had to show Moshe Rabbeinu exactly how to make the menorah. So the Gemara says, Elamei Hata, ala Shulchan HaTohar. What about a couple of Sifim later? It also mentions the Shulchan, which is Tohar. Ochinami, are you going to say Shiyodim Asem and Mokum Tara? You're going to say also that it means that the design of it came down from a Tohar place, that Hashem had to show Moshe exactly how it was made. We don't find such a thing. Ella, no, rather we should understand. Tohar Miklal Shu Tomei. The word Tohar implies it has to be kept Tohar, implying that it's capable of becoming Tomei. By the Shulchan. Well then, Hochanami. Well then, by the menorah, would say the same thing. Tahora Miklal Shu Tomei. It says Tahora, meaning make sure to keep it Tohar, because it has the capability of becoming Tomei. So then, how do we doubt that it means that it came down from Mokum Tara, from Shemayim? And the answer is it's not really the same thing. B'shlema Hosam. You know, by the Shulchan, the Torah does need to tell us HaTahora because there's a Chiddush in it. Because we would have thought otherwise, as follows. Kiddush Shlokish. Like the Shlokish is Drasha. Dominic Shlokish. My dichtiv, al ha-shulchan ha-tohar. Again, the pasuk says that you have to place the lechem upon him on the pure shulchan. Now again, miklal shu tomei, that seems to imply that the shulchan is capable of being mekabel truma. Now there are other meanings of al ha-shulchan ha-tohar. Rashi on the pasuk, for example, mentions that it means that the bottom lechem upon him is placed directly on the table. There shouldn't be anything between them. Later in the Masechta, when we learn all about how the lechem upon him was placed on the shulchan, we're going to talk about the sticks, the half tubes that they had between one layer and the next. To keep them fresh, but there shouldn't be any underneath there. They should be on the bare table. The Gemara's understanding the word tahora also means Rosh Lakish's understanding that tahora means, in other words, that it's capable of becoming tamei. But let's not do that. We want to make sure it remains tahor. Now the question is, why should that be? Why is it mekabel truma in the first place? This is the shulchan is made out of wood. It's plating and built, but the plating is bottle. The plating is not considered important relative to the wood itself. So it's basically a wooden keli which is made lenachas to stay in one place. Now the din is like this: when it comes to wooden kelim to be makabel chuma, the pasuk compares wooden kelim to a sack. The pasuk mentions them all together. So we learn from that a wooden keli to be mekabel truma has to be similar to a sack. A sack can be carried around empty or full. The same way we learn that a wooden keli to be mekabel truma has to be carried around empty or full. And the shulchan is not carried around. The fact that they carried around in the midbar from place to place, from camp to camp, that's not considered that it's being carried around. So in other words, the point is the place of it is in the mishkan, and when it's placed in its place in the mishkan, it's not meant to be moved. So therefore, it's a wooden keli. It's meant to be kept in one place. And the whole is also the nachas and makabel truma. So it's the thing. It's not makabel truma because it's not like a sand. It's a machlokas Rashi. It's a machlokas Rambam and the Raivad. The Rambam holds in general any keli that's not moved around is not makabel truma. Any wooden keli, the Raivad argues only the shulchan where you're not allowed to move it around. But if you're allowed to move it around, even if you practically don't, then it's not makabel truma. No sekelim on the Rambam and various other later. And various other later reportions talk about details within it. Anyway, the point is, so why is the Shulchan Makabel Truma? Ella, from this we learn that the Shulchan was in fact moved when it was in the Mishkan and in the Beis Hamikdash. They would pick it up and show it to the Olei Regel. And there's even, the Yerushalmi even says they would actually take it out of the Heichal to show the Olei Regel, Umarim Lahem Lachem Aponim, and they would show them the Lachem Aponim, V'Oyim Lahem. And they would tell them, Ru'uchi Baskam, Lifnei Amokim, see how beloved you are by Hashem. Because of the nest with the lachem upon him, as the Gemara is going to go on to say. So we see, therefore, the shulchan was, in fact, carried. It is the lachem upon him on it. Therefore, it's makabel truma. Therefore, and that's what the word, HaShulchan HaTohar, teaches us. The shulchan would have been makabel truma, because it's not kli'esa, and therefore, the Torah is warning you, make sure that it stays tohar. At the end of Chagiga, in fact, the Mishnah tells us that after each of the three regalim, They would tovel the kelim of the Beis Mikdash precisely because Kohenim who are Tomei may have touched them, or even the Ola Regal may have touched the Shulchan, except, but they would actually have to be careful. They would say, don't touch them. They would have to warn them when they're bringing out the Shulchan, don't touch it, because if the Shulchan becomes Tomei, we can't tovel it, because we have to have the Lechem Aponim on it constantly, and we can't very well do that when we can't very well tovel it when the Lechem Aponim is on it. So therefore, be careful you don't touch it in the first place so it doesn't become Tomei. But the point is, in other words, it could become Tomei. Why? Because it is moved around. So this is my Fibaskam. Where do we see the love of Hashem for the Jewish people in the Shulchan? And the answer is Kedir Rav Shurban Levi. The way Rav Shurban Levi explains it. Dhamma Rav Shurban Levi, Nes Gadol Nasa B'Lachem Aponim, a great Nes was done with Lachem Aponim, Silukai Kisidurai. It was just when they took it off the Shulchan, the Shabbat, we're going to learn later in the Masechta the details about it, they would place it on the Shulchan every Shabbos, and then they would leave it on the Shulchan all week, and take it off the Shulchan on the next Shabbos, so, and it would still be just as fresh. Shenema, just as fresh and just as hot. Shenema, as the pasuk says, losum lechem choyim v'yom hilachay, to place hot bread on the day that it was taken. So meaning, in other words, when they took it off, the Shulchan, it was still hot. Tosfos points out later in the Masechta we're going to discuss the question: were the lechem aponim baked on Shabbos itself, or were they baked on erev Shabbos? So it gets down to the question basically whether the oven that they baked them in is considered a kli shoris. If the oven itself is a kli shoris, then they have to bake it on Shabbos. If they bake it on Friday, it's going to become possible by being left overnight, lina. Then they'd have no choice but to bake it on Shabbos. Whereas if the oven is not considered a kli shoris, then fine, it doesn't have that degree of kedusha yet till it's placed on the Shulchan, and then they can bake it on Friday. So Tosfos says that actually if they baked it on Friday, it wasn't necessarily hot when they put it on the Shulchan, but at least it was fresh. On the other hand, there are Mefoshim who understand that it means that no matter what, it was a nest that was fresh and hot. And in fact, the Ritva, I think, says, so how do they show them that? How do they show it? If they can't touch it, how do they know that it's fresh and hot? And he says, because there would actually see steam rising from it. So they could literally see that it was hot, even though it had been on the Shulchan for several days by the time they show it to him. Anyway, the point is that therefore, so when it comes to the Shulchan, therefore the Torah needs to tell us that it's Tahora, because in other words, the point is, the Torah is hinting by that. The Shulchan is in fact capable of becoming Tomei because it's moved around to show the Oiler Rebbe. Therefore, be careful that it remains Tahora and does not become Tomei. But when it comes to the menorah, why should it need to say Tahora? Mikal sheets meyer, would it have to say Tahora in order to hint that it could become Tomei? Pshita, of course it can become Tomei. Kli machas minu. The menorah is made out of metal. Or kli machas metabalim chuba. All metal kelim on the tabal chuba. There's no rules within that. As long as it's a finished kelim, it's a tabal chuba. So there's no reason for it to say Tahora. Therefore, we have to say that there, by the menorah, when it says Tahora, hints that it came down from a place of purity that Hashem showed it to Moshe. So the Gemara continues, Tanya, we learn in a Braisa, what does this mean? Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Yehuda, that Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Yehuda says, it wasn't just the menorah. Orin shal esh, v'shulchan shal esh, v'menorah shal esh, yodim in Hashemayim. Hashem sent down from Shemayim an orin and a shulchan and a menorah, all made out of fire. The raw Moshe and Moshe saw what they looked like, v'asa kamosam, and then he made exactly like them out of wood and gold. For Nema, as the Pasuk says, Evasei, Hashem tells Moshe, see and do, kisav nisam, or bisav nisam, is how it actually says in the Pasuk, Asherat Amora Bahar, according to the form that you saw on the mountain, on Har Sinai. So therefore we see that he was shown the form of each one of them. So the Gemara says, Elamei Ata, what about the Mishkan as a whole? V'hachem Moses ha-Mishkan k'mishpate, asher ha-reisa bahar. The Pasuk says, put up the Mishkan, according to its rules, as you were shown on the mountain, Hochinami, are you going to say that a Mishkan as a whole, that a whole Mishkan of fire came down to Moshe? So no. So why should we say it by the Oren, Shulchan, and Menorah? And the answer is Hochak Siv Kemishpatei. By the Mishkan, it says that Hashem tells him to build it Kemishpatei, meaning according to the halachos that you were taught of how to build. But when it comes to the Kelim, the Oren, Shulchan, and Menorah, the expression in the Pasuk is, that you should make them ketav nisam, according to their form that you were shown, implying that Hashem showed him the actual form of them. Tosfos points out by the Mishkan, it also says that Hashem tells him, I'm showing you es tav nisam Mishkan, I'm showing you the form of the Mishkan and of the Kelim, but it doesn't say bahor. So there it can mean Hashem showed it to him, but not on Har Sinai. So we're saying on Har Sinai, Hashem sent down the forms, the 3D images of these three kelim, and Moshe was able to duplicate them. So the Gemara continues. Amar Rav Chiya bar Abba, Amar Rav Yochanan, Gavriel chogek min psik yahaya. Malach Gavriel was belted with a kind of psikia. A psikia is a belt or a sash. Rashi explains, and I mean, we have this in many places, that when a person wants to do a hard job, he doesn't want it. In those days, people wore long flowing robes, and you don't want it to get in the way while you're doing the job, so you belt it up, you hitch it up with a belt, so it doesn't get in the way. So Gabriel now acted like an architect or like a craftsman and did the same thing. He put on a belt, and Gabriel is a malach of fire, so therefore he's going to be the one who's going to be making these kalim of fire for to show Moshe. So he did that. The hera lo Moshe, ma'aseh menorah, and he showed Moshe specifically how to make the menorah. This did the zeh ma'aseh menorah, as the pasuk says, and this is the work of the menorah, implying whenever it says and this means it's something that's shown to him. So it means he's actually showing him with his finger, Gavriel, how exactly to make the menorah. A couple of interesting points on that I brought by Mephoshim. One of them is that the word Moreh, we said that Hashem tells Moshe, make them according to your image, according to their image, that you were Moreh, that you were shown on Har Sinai. The word Moreh is the same gematria as Gavriel, hinting that Hashem sent Malach Gavriel to show Moshe how to make them. So the Gemara continues. There were three things that Moshe found difficult to understand. Until Hashem himself, so to speak, showed him with his finger. The menorah, how exactly we make it. How to know what after all, the time of the molad, the moon is just barely visible. So then, and you need a lot of details to understand how exactly it should look and what to ask the Edim and what to interrogate them and how to decide whether it's visible enough to determine Rosh Chodesh. So Moshe had a hard time with that. Shiratzim, and the Shiratzim that Moshe didn't recognize which Sheretz is Tomei and which one is Tahor. So, Menorah, Dechtiv, Zeh Ma'aseh Menorah. We know by the Menorah because it says, and this is the work of the Menorah. Marshall points out like this. There's many places in the Torah where it says Zeh on a mitzvah, but usually it gives the details of the mitzvah, and then it says Zeh, and this is how you should do it. So it means I'm giving you the details, now go ahead and do it exactly this way. But here you have Zeh comes as a new thing without anything being described before it. So therefore, so we have Zeh over Zeh comes without anything being described before it. So it means Hashem has to show Moshe this thing in order for him to fully understand it. So Menorah to give Zeh Ma'aseh Menorah, Rosh Chodesh to give a Chodesh HaZeh Lachem Rosh Chodeshim, that Hashem tells him this month shall be for you the new moon. Shiratzim just give Zeh Lachem HaTomei, and the Shiratzim because the passage says, and this shall be for you the Tomei. So in other words, that Moshe, and that Hashem had to actually show Moshe each of the Shiratzim. But yes, I mean, you have to realize, by the way, we're learning Cholim Ves Hashem, a number of these Shiratzim, a number of these eight Shiratzim, where they're Matame, a person when they're dead, I mean, personally, kalim, food, drink, whatever, a lot of them look very similar to other species that are not metame. So therefore, so Hashem would have had to show Moshe the specific species or subspecies that have these words. The yesh emim, afhilchus shchita, some say also the halachas of shchita. Where exactly do you have to shech on the neck? Where otherwise it's called mugremes, which we'll learn about in Masechta Chulin, Ves Hashem, etc., all the finer details about that. As the pasuk says, and this is what you should do on the mizbeach, and the beginning of the doing is bringing the korban. So therefore, again, it would be that Hashem showed it to him. Tosfos points out there's other ones as well. The Gemara tells us in Chulin that when it says zoisachaya shatoshu, these are the animals that you can eat, means Hashem showed Moshe every single animal. But Tosfos says because here the Gemara is focusing where it says zeh, there it says zois. Now fine, okay, zeh is masculine, zois is feminine, but fine. The Gemara over here is for Tanan Vei Rabbi Shmuel is focusing only on the ones that it says zeh. Then another one, Tosfos says, what about Machza Shekel? Zeh Yitru. We have the famous thing that it says that Hashem showed Moshe a coin of fire. Moshe didn't understand, and Hashem had to show him a coin of fire. So why don't we list that as well? So Tosfos says, because it's not there, what it is Moshe wouldn't have even known, would have had no idea about it, what coin, unless Hashem shows him. Here, in other words, Moshe understands there needs to be a menorah. He just doesn't know the actual details of it. He knows there has to be a merlin, a levana, and there has to be a phase of the moon. It's when you declare a shchodesh, but he didn't know exactly what it was. Here, with the master shekel, Moshe didn't really know at all what coin it would even be, unless Hashem told him. In Cholin, Tosfos gives a different answer. It's not so much Moshe didn't know what coin, it's Moshe couldn't understand how is a master shekel going to be lachaper on and how is it going to be a kapara for the Jewish people, especially for the Chetze Egel? And then Hashem replies, saying with a coin of fine. Very much as Man Groma, since it's coming Parashah, it's coming Shabbos, it's Parashah Shkolim. There's many sikhas where the Rebbe talks about different angles about it, what exactly was Moshe's question and what exactly Hashem showed him. Among other things is the idea that the fire is the main thing. It's not just that you're giving a master shekel, it's you're giving it with a fire, and therefore that helps be a kapara. So that's all the end of the discussion about the menorah. Now continuing, the Mishnah had said shtei parshiyos shema mezuzah ma'akvas zuasu. We said in a mezuzah you have to have two parshiyos, shema and v'hayim shemaya, and they're ma'akv one another. If you only have one of them written, then the mezuzah is possible. And the Mishnah had said v'afkiv k'sav echad ma'akvan. Even one detail of the writing on the face of it, ksav echad, means one letter. So even if one letter is missing, then it's ma'akiv and the mezuzah is possible. So the Mishnah says pshita. Isn't that obvious? The Rashi points out, since by the mezuzah it says ksav tom, so we learn from that it has to be ksiva tama, it has to be a perfect writing without anything missing. So of course there can't be missing a letter. So the answer is Amar Rabbi Yehuda Amar Avla Nitzvah Elo L'Koitza Shol Yud. Fine, but the Mishnah has to tell us, in order to tell us that even if the Koitza Shol Yud is missing. Now, what is the Koitza Shol Yud? Rashi explains a Yud has a little leg that curves downward, and on the right side of the letter, and that would be the Koitza Shol Yud. So if that's missing, so even though you have the body of the Yud, but you're missing that leg that extends downward, then it's possible. Tosfos says, oh, well, still, obviously, without that, you don't have a letter. A yud without that thing is not really a yud. It's just a blob of ink. So Rabbi Natan says that what it means is, that's it. It means on the other side of the yud. If you look at a yud in a Sefer Torah, you'll see that there are actually three places. The body of the yud itself is more or less a square, but then you have those three places where things stick out of it. There's that leg that we were just talking about that Rashi says is the Tosfos for yud. Then you have on top, on the left side of the letter, on top and on bottom, there are little things sticking out. On top is a tag, and on bottom there's a little tiny bottom. On the bottom left of the yud, there's also a little protrusion sticking out. Tosfos says that third one is what we're talking about. If that one is missing, even though you would think without it you have the basic shape of a yud, you know, you're looking Siddur letters, for example, you don't have a koitz over there. You know, nevertheless, in Sefer Torah letters, it will be possible if it's missing that. And then there are Rishonim who learn that it means the tag on top. Lamaisa, you need all three of them. So if they're missing, then it's not ksiva tama, it's not a perfect writing. So the Gemara says still bahonami pshita. Still isn't that poshut, if the letter is possible, then you don't have that, as if that letter was missing. Rather, the Mishnah is teaching us, the Mishnah is hinting to us, something else that Rabbi Yehuda taught us in the name of Rav, the Amr of Yehuda Amar Rav. Any letter that in a mezuzah, and for that matter in tefillin and sefer Torah, where the gvil, where blank parchment, does not surround the letter on all four sides, so in other words, you have one letter is stuck to the other, or the post can talk about, you can also have, where a letter is written right by the edge of the clasp, and you have no clasp around it. So then that letter is possible. In other words, ksavach ma'atman means not only that each letter has to be complete, but it means that each letter has to be completely surrounded by blank parchment, because again, otherwise it's not ksiva tam. Otherwise it's not a complete perfect writing. So if letters are stuck together, then the mezuzah or whatever it is are going to be possible. Suppose Skim have talk about an enormous number of details, and you have a whole svarim on Hilchos Stam that deal with these details about it, in what cases, if letters are attached together, in what cases can we scrape the extra ink and then separate them, and in what cases can we not? In particular, as we're going to learn as we go through our parak, mezuzahs and tefillin have to be written kisidron. All the letters have to be written in order. So if you find you wrote a mezuzah and you find towards the end it was a mistake early on, you can't just erase that and rewrite it. So therefore, and then the mezuzah will be possible. So the post can talk about a lot of details. When do we say that two letters stuck together, that the letters themselves are actually possible, and you can't do, and you can't scrape them apart, because then that would be, first of all, because of that, because it would be chalak sidron, but also because you have something called fat plisus. You can't create the letters by carving them out, you have to create the letters by writing, versus when you could, when you say that the letters basically are intact, so just you have a little negia, a little place where they touch, and then you're still able to scrape away that part, and it's not considered a problem. So the Hilchos Sam have a lot of details about such things. Okay. But you want to continue. Omar Ashian van Nidbach Meshmeder of Yehuda. Ashian van Nidbach said in the name of Rabbi Yehuda the following day, Mikav Toche Shalhei. If there's a hole in the parchment in the inside of the hay. Now, Rashi has two explanations. One is that Tofei Shel Hay means the separated letter of the hay. You know, the separated leg of the hay. The hay, of course, has two legs, one attached to the roof and the other one separated. So according to Rashi's first explanation, Tofei Shel Hay would mean that dot-like shape, that yud-like shape that forms the leg of the hay if there's a hole in the parchment there. So he says kosher. It's kosher as long as there's some ink left. So therefore, so in other words, as long as you can see that there was a leg over there, even if there's a hole that removed most of it. The second explanation in Rashi is that it means toichah shel hay would be the blank space inside the hay. So in other words, there's a hole in the parchment. Right, you have the inner space of the hay, the area between the roof and the left leg and the right leg. So there's a hole in the parchment in that area. So then also it would be cautious, as long as there's some parchment left. The post can talk about details. It's not always. Sometimes what you need to do is you need to scrape off a little of the ink, because again, you have the issue of mukaf gehil. The letter, every part of the letter has to be completely surrounded by blank parchment. If it's adjacent to a hole, then it's not mukaf gehil. So you have details about that. Ashian van Midrach continues, Yerechoi, what happens on the other hand if the right leg of the hay, the one that's attached to the roof, what if there's a hole there? Also, then the thing is going to be possible. However, Rav Zera says it's not so simple. Rav Huna personally explained me that there's details within that. So both Rav Huna and Rav Yehuda personally explained to their Talmidim, it depends. Nikav Toichah Shel Hay Kosher, what we're saying is as follows, let's clarify. If the inside of the hay has a hole, is kosher, again, meaning according to the first explanation, the left detached leg of the hay has a hole that took away most of its substance, but you still have some of the ink there, so it's recognizable that there was a dot there. And according to the second explanation, it means the space inside the hay. Yerechai, when it comes to the leg, it's not always possible. Depends. In the Shtayba, Kashir Oisktana, if the remaining part of the leg is long enough to be the size of a small letter, meaning a letter Yud, then it's still kosher. The imlav, if it's not that long, posel, then it will be kosher. So it's not always going to be posel. Depends on how much of the leg is left, and it's trim. And the post can bring that not only by a hay, but by other letters as well that have legs. The general rule is that as long as there's left attached to the body of the letter enough to shear oiskana, the size of a small letter, the size of a yud, then you're fine. If not, then no good. Think about it continues. Agra, Hamur de Rav Chama, Agra, the father-in-law of Rav Chama, Ifsikila Kara de Hei de Ha'om, the Nikra. One time, the Hei of the letter Ha'om in his tefillin had a hole in it in the middle of the letter. In the leg of the letter. So the same thing. So the same question, is it kosher or fossil? Also, Kameh de Rav Abba. So he came to Rav Abba, his son-in-law, to ask what the din is. Omalei and Rav Abba told them the same thing. If there's enough of the leg, the size of a small letter, the size of a hay, above the hole, kosher, then it's good. So in other words, not just a theoretical halacha, but we see in practice that Rav Abba passed in that way for his father-in-law. Okay. The Gemara continues with a similar case. Rami Bar Tamri, Dehu Chamur de Rami Bar Dikuli. Rami Bar Tamri, who was the father-in-law of Rami Bar Dikuli. So that's the gears that we have in front of us over here. Shitim Kubetza says that it should be, instead of Dehu Chamua, take out the word Chamua, Dehu Rami Bar Dikuli. Rami Bar Tamri, who's also known as Rami Bar Dikuli. We'll have her in Cholin in several months, Be'ez Hashem, towards the end of this year, Be'ez Hashem, we'll have a story in Masechta Cholin that has the same person, and there he is in fact clearly identified as that he goes by two names, Rami Bar Tamri and Rami Bar Dikuli. Tamri means date. Dikuli means palm trees, so it makes sense that his father was known by both of those names. According to the Girsa that we have in front of us that says that Rami Bar Tamri is the father-in-law of Rami Bar Dikuli, by the way, the Poskim Achronim talk about a point that is brought in Tzavah of Rabbi Yehuda HaChassid, that a son-in-law and a father-in-law should not have, that a man should marry a woman whose father's name is the same as his own name. And here we have that Rami Bar Tamri is, according to the Girsa in front of us, that Rami Bar Tamri married off his daughter to Rami Bar Dikuli. So they talk about, is that in fact an issue? Is it maybe not an issue at all? Is it maybe only for the Yehuda HaChassid's descendants? And various other angles that they talk about and possibilities about it. In any case, so this is Rami. If Sikale Kara Devav, there was a hole in the letter of Vav, Devayareg, in the word Vayareg, Hashem Kol Bechor, in his film, the Nikva, there was a hole in the middle of the Vav. Now, here you have a problem. Here you can't just say if there's enough left of Ois Ktana, because a Vav with a short leg is going to look like a Yud. So what do we do? Also, Kameh did Abzera. So he came to Abzera with the Shaila. Amalei said, Abzera tells him, Zil Isi Yenuka, Delech Hakim Velech Tipish. Bring a child who's neither wise nor foolish. He's not exceptionally wise, because then he's going to realize right away, Rashi says, he's going to realize from context. In other words, the question is, does the word look like Vayahareg, or does it look like Yehoreg? Vayahareg Hashem means Hashem killed all the Bechorim. Yehoreg means he will be killed, and then Hashem would chas v'shalom be the subject of that verb. So if the child is a chacham, when he sees this, and he doesn't know whether it's a vav or a yud, he's immediately going to grasp that it can't possibly be a yud, because then it would be saying Yehoreg Hashem, which is blasphemous. So you can't have the kid be too smart. On the other hand, he can't be too unknowing, too tiffish, too ignorant either, because then he won't be able to read a partial letter. So you need him to be able to recognize a partial letter, but on the other hand, not to be able to tell from the contents what it is. So you show him it, and you ask him what he sees that letter as. If he reads the word vayareg kosher, then it's still kosher, and there's enough of the leg left that it's recognizable as a vav. Eloi yehoreg, who is not, then it's in effect saying yehoreg, and that's not what the word is supposed to be. Apostle, and therefore it's going to be apostle. And we have that concept in general. Many times we have, when there's a problem with a letter in a Sefer Torah, or a letter or a space or all kinds of things like that, many times you have that halacha that you bring a child like that who's neither chakim nor tipish, and you ask him. And the poskim can talk about different details of what you have to do. You have to cover the letters before it, because otherwise, if the kid's familiar with the pasuk, he's just going to read it and then be able to know it from context. And if, for example, there's a hole in the middle of a letter, you have to cover the part below the hole, because the child himself is naturally going to realize what's below the hole goes with what's above it, but the halacha is not considered connected. So you have different details like that. Okay. We talked before about the Kotzer Shel Yud, and we had the different opinions what that means exactly, what that means in terms of the various protrusions around the Yud. So now let's talk more about these Kotzim, let's talk more about these various protrusions and decorations that you have on the letters in Sefer Torah, Tefillin, and Mezuzos. So the Gemara says, "Amar Rabbi Yehuda Amar Rav, b'shal she'ala Moshe l'amorim." When Moshe Rabbeinu went up on high to receive the Torah, "Motzei l'Hakadosh Baruch Hu she'yoshev b'kosher k'sarim la'osis." So he saw that Hashem was tying crowns onto the letters, namely placing the tagim on the letters in the Torah. By the way, nowadays the tagim that we have are really only a pale shadow of what they're supposed to be. We have, the Gemara is going to talk about soon, the letters that have three tagim, and we have them all over our Sefer Torah. Have that. But in addition, you have there's various things brought in different svarim of different other variations that are supposed to be. There's supposed to be in some places more tagim on certain letters. There's supposed to be in certain places slight variations in the shapes of the letters. For example, having the bottom of a vav curled in, or having the legs of a ches widened out, or having the inside of the pei made like a few different things like that. Bala Turin mentions them in some places. There are various rishonim referred to a sefer called Sefer Tagim, which is attributed to Eli HaKohen, that he copied from the stones that they put up in Gilgal, where they wrote the Torah on in Yeshua's times, and it says in Parshas Kisavah, and it says in Sefer Yeshua. So they wrote them according to this opinion, with all the Targum and all these flourishes and everything. And later on, Eli HaKohen copied it down from there and made a Sefer of it called Sefer Taggi. The Rishonim refer to it in different places. I'm not sure that it exists as a complete thing anymore. In any case, we don't write with most of those flourishes and details in our Sefer Torah nowadays. Anyway, but now Moshe sees that Hashem is writing all these details and flourishes. So Moshe says to Hashem, Ribbono Shel Olam, Mima Akav Al Yadcha, who's preventing you? In other words, you already wrote the letters. You have to also add crowns and things to them. Hashem tells him, there's going to be a man many generations after now, Akiva ben Yosef Shemo, his name is Akiva ben Yosef, which is Rabbi Akiva. This Rabbi Akiva is going to darshan on every one of these points and every one of these tagging and all these details. He's going to darshan from each one of them mounds upon mounds of halachas. So therefore, they're very important, and therefore I have to add them to the Torah. So Moshe says to Hashem, Ribbono Shel Olam, show him to me. I want to see such an outstanding Talmud Chacham. I want to see him. So Hashem tells him, Chazor la'acherecha, go back. In the simple sense, go back means, in other words, go travel and travel to time travel, and you'll eventually see him. We'll talk about soon a couple of symbolic ideas what Chazor la'acherecha means. Holach Moshe v'yoshev b'seif shmona shuris. So Moshe went and sat in the back of eight rows of Rabbi Akiva's Talmidim. And he didn't know what they were saying. He couldn't understand what they were talking in Torah. So his koyach was weak. Well, it means that Rabbi Akiva knows more than I know. Given she gave the dover, I thought eventually that Akiva reached a certain matter in his shir, a certain point. Omer le Talmidim Rebbe minayin lach. So Talmidim asked him, Rebbe, where do you get this point from? So Rabbi Akiva tells him, halacha l'Moshe m'Sinai. This point is a halacha l'Moshe m'Sinai. So Moshe saw now that Rabbi Akiva is saying things in his name. So fine, Moshe doesn't feel bad, says Rashi. Moshe himself, fine, he doesn't know this point yet. Okay, he didn't learn that particular point from Hashem yet. But nevertheless, he realizes that ultimately, it's not that Rabbi Akiva is going to end up knowing more than Moshe Rabbeinu does. It's rather right now, Moshe hasn't learned this yet. And Rabbi Akiva, who's going to live 1,500 years later, has already learned that. So he felt bad. There's many different explanations and symbolisms and different things that the Forshim talk about in this one. Another explanation, for example, is that Moshe was taught the general principles of the Torah, which everything unfolds from there. Once you know those principles and you know how to apply them, then everything follows from there. Moshe was taught the general principles. He wasn't necessarily taught all of the details that emerged from them. Rabbi Akiva had already, by his time, they had already, and Moshe Rabbeinu himself, during his time, during the 40 years in the desert, together with Yeshua and the Sanim and the rest of them, teased out these details. But right now, Moshe doesn't know those details, not because he hadn't been taught that part of Torah yet, but because the details have to still be worked out by boss of Adam, by human agency. And then, so now, when Rabbi Akiva says, this is Allah, Moshe Mishinai, then Moshe realizes everything that Rabbi Akiva has taught is already incorporated in what I already learned from Hashem. And those explanations along the lines of that Moshe and Rabbi Akiva are on two completely different levels. More than Maharal talks about it. At some length, Moshe is on a level where he's supposed to bring the Torah down to earth. Therefore, he has more to do with the earth. Rabbi Akiva is more connected with Shamayim. And therefore, Rabbi Akiva's style of learning is utterly, and his mahalach, his approach to Torah is completely different than Moshe's. But ultimately, again, it's based on Moshe's Torah. Al-Shaw talks about over here the symbolism of eight, of Chazor L'Acherecha, go backwards, and eight rows. He says you have eight Nekudas that can be placed together with each of the letters of the Aleph days. Komets, Patach, Seire, Segel, Spirit, Cholam, Pubus, and Shurim. So therefore, to go back means to look at the Aleph days in reverse order from Tuf to Aleph and consider how each of the letters can be paired up with any of the eight Nekudas, and therefore, and then consider what all that means in terms of Torah. So Rabbi Akiva is explaining all that. Eventually, he comes to Dover Echad. Marshall explains Dover Echad means literally he comes to the number one in the Aleph days, the letter Aleph. And as somebody asks him, why indeed is the letter Aleph representing one? And Rabbi Akiva tells them, I don't know. Why was it decided that way, that Aleph should be the first letter of the Aleph days and represent the number one? I don't know, but it's Halacha L'Moshe M'Sinai. And then Moshe Rabbeinu felt better that he realized it's now again that that there are details in Torah that are going to be worked out, that they still all descend from the Torah that was given to him, Moshe at Sinai. So the Gemara continues the story. So Moshe came back before Hashem. Allah Mafana, he says, Ribbono Shel Olam, Yesh Lecha Adam Kazeh, you have such a person that's going to be in your world, Va'atan Nosin Torah Al Yodi, and you're giving the Torah through me? Give it through Rabbi Akiva. Amalai, Hashem tells him, Shsoi, be quiet. Kach Olam Machshav Alafana. This is how it came up in my primordial thought that I have my plans for the world, which even you, Moshe Rabbeinu, can't understand. And again, one explanation of it is, following this thing of the Maharal about Moshe and Rabbi Akiva's different levels, that Moshe is asking Hashem, why don't you create, why don't you have the Torah group given through Rabbi Akiva? And Hashem tells him, I'm the one who decided that Rabbi Akiva is going to be this level of connection to Shemayim, and you're going to have a different connection to the world, and you're going to have a connection to the world, and bring the Torah down to it, and that's how I decided, and it's not possible to explain it to a human being. So now Moshe says to Hashem, Ribbono Shel Olam, Hevi Sani Torah. So you showed me Rabbi Akiva's Torah, had any schorei. Now show me his schar, such an outstanding Talmud Chacham. He must have a tremendous schar. Omaloi, Chazor L'Acharach, then Hashem tells him, go backwards, travel in time. Chazor L'Acharach, Moshe goes and goes to Rabbi Akiva's times, and he saw Rabbi Akiva, we know, was one of our Sarah Rogi Malchus, to Shoitlin Besore B'Makfoilin. That they were weighing out Rabbi Akiva's flesh in the meat market. After they killed him, they combed off his flesh with iron combs. Then they took his flesh and they were selling it in the marketplace as ordinary meat. Now there's different places. It talks about, for example, Josephus and Rabbi Matthias that brings from a medrash that Rabbi Akiva's body was taken for burial by Eliyahu Hanavi and Rabbi Yeshua HaGarsi, one of Rabbi Akiva's Talmidim. So according to that, maybe they talk about the possibility that maybe it means that they didn't actually literally take his flesh and sell it. It just means, in other words, they pretended as though they did. They pretended as though, here, you know, come buy Rabbi Akiva meat, the Romans are saying sardonically, but really they just took meat from something else and passed it off as that, but still it's a tremendous bizarre. Moshe says, Ribbono Shel Olam, Zu Torah v'zu Schorah. This is the Torah and this is the reward. How could that be the reward for Rabbi Akiva? For his tremendous accomplishments in Torah. And again, Omalai, Hashem tells him, Shsoik, be quiet, kach olam machshava lefanai, this is how it is in my machshava, meaning again, no boss of a dumb can fully understand how Hashem runs the world. One point of it is, that Sain Kodshim does make a point over here, you have the famous thing where it says that Hashem originally intended to create the world with Midas Adin, but eventually then Hashem realized the world is not going to last that way, so to speak. Hashem realized and instead created the world with a blend of Din and Nachmim, which is why Maisa Bereshis first begins with Bereshis Bara Elikim, and throughout the story of Maisa Bereshis, always the name Elikim is used, and only then does it start using Hashem Elikim, and Hashem combined Midas Arachmim with it. Well, then the vote would be that Hashem tells him that tzaddikim are still being the world, for tzaddikim the world is still being run with midas adin. So you can't possibly understand that, but that's how it is. That for the world at large, it's midas adin blended with midas arachmin, but with tzaddikim it's still midas adin. That actually makes a somewhat similar point.
How come Hashem did not realize that the world was a world of din? I mean,
so that's what it means. When we say Hashem realized, and Hashem, obviously Hashem doesn't change his mind, what it means, whenever we talk about Hashem thinking to do something one way and then actually doing it a different way, means Hashem put the capability for that into the world in the first place, through Hashem's thought. Then Hashem says that now that capability has been brought into being, now I'm going to actually make the world with that latent capability, but in actuality, in our lived experience, it's going to be different. In this case, then that's the point, though, is Hashem created the ability for the world to be able to run with Midas Adin, which is the Sain Kodshim on our Gemara is saying that was left for the Tzaddikim. The Tzaddikim still are able to do that. The Gemara elsewhere phrases it in a similar way. The Gemara says that there are Tzaddikim who they fully deserve the reward that Hashem gives them, like they earn it. Most of us, the reward that Hashem gives us is a chesed, but you have certain exceptional tzaddikim that the Gemara says bizroya, like they can almost like force their way in and demand it by as their right. That's midas adin. So Hashem put that capability into the world, and it still exists for the tzaddikim. I was going to say that the Rebbe talks about in one place in the Siddur and Daf. In a similar vein, the Gemara is going to talk about soon that Olam Hazeh was created with a hay and Olam Habah was created with a yud. The Alter Rebbe explains in one place in the Siddur and Daf that also, the Hey represents Chesed, the Yud represents Gvura, and it means, in other words, Olam Haba runs on Gvura. And Law said Lover, when Mashiach comes, the world as a whole, our world as well, will be able to run on Gvura, and we'll be able to tolerate it. We'll be able to, because we ourselves will be on a higher level, and we will be like those high level tzaddikim now who are able to run on Gvura.
So, was it initially a mistake, or it was a plan
no,
to
not
begin
a mistake,
with?
That's the Shalom. What we're saying is, in other words, Hashem created that latent capability in the world. And now, in actuality, the common run of people are not going to be able to manage that. So Hashem created the Midas Adin. Hashem thought first to create the Midas Adin only, in other words, creating that capability in the world, creating the capability for Tzaddikim to have that in earlier times, and creating the capability that Olam Haba and the time of Mashiach will be able to have that exclusively.
But he didn't have to. He could have created both Midas Adin and Midas Achesed at the same time.
Both at the same time, then it would mean there's no possibility of Midas Adin being by itself. But Hashem wanted the ability for Midas Adin to be able to be by itself. So that, and in particular for high level tzaddikim and so on and so forth, to be able to operate that way.
Hashem could have done it.
Hashem could have done it. This is how Hashem did it. Hashem thought it first, therefore creating that latent capability, and then Hashem actually did it a different way, making that in our experienced reality exist. That's in general, when you talk about Hashem thinking one thing and then doing another, then it means Hashem created that capability for it to happen, and then Hashem said, for right now, it's not going to be that way, but that capability still exists and will come out when it needs to.
Did he have his mind before he created it? Planned this way?
Yes, that's the thing. All of it is part of Hashem's plan. All of it is part of Hashem's plan, but Hashem is saying, I'm creating this capability. I'm aware that to begin with, that my creations are not going to be able to manage with that capability. Nevertheless, that I'm making that capability to exist in the first place in Hashem's machshava, in Hashem's thought, meaning that it has a reality to it already, so that it can be exercised when it comes to it, when the appropriate time and place and person comes.
Which is Mashiach.
Yeah, ultimately, it's the times of Mashiach. All right, let's go on. The Gemara says, Omar Rava. There are seven letters in the Torah that each require three ziyunim, three tagging. Tosfos has it. Tosfos over here, there are three different diagrams of how the tagim are to be done. One version is one on the top right, one on the top left, and one on the bottom left. Another one is that there are one on the right, one on the right, one on the left, and one in the middle. Another one is that they're all on top. Nowadays, the usual way that almost all seifrim do it, maybe even all seifrim, I don't know, is that they're on top of the letter, but not at the edges. They're set in a little bit from the edges, and they're one right next to the other. The Elohim, and they are the letters Shatnez Getz. Shin, Ayin, Tes, Nun, Zion, Gimel, and Tzadik. So all of those letters, on the left, each of those letters has two or three, each of those letters has at least one head, which is Zion shaped, and you put it on top of that. So in the case of the Shin and the Ayin and the Tes and the Tzadik, it goes on the left side head. In the case of Nun, Zion, and Gimel, they only have one head, so it goes on top of that. Interesting ideas that they talk about. What the Chidushim HaMifasim LaRashba brings an interesting point. Why dafka those letters? First of all, because again, they have a head, they have a top which is capable of having tagim on it. Let's say, for example, Aleph doesn't have like a flat head at the edge of it to be able to put tagim on it. Or they have a wide head. We want where they have a narrow head just large enough for the tagim, basically. And then he says, as far as Vav and Yud, those are letters of Hashem's name. We don't want to have it. Wouldn't be respectful that some letters of Hashem's name have tagim and some don't. Therefore, we don't do that. And he says Lamed also, it sticks up above the other letters, so therefore that's a practical reason why only these seven. It's brought in Sifrei Kabbalah that they represent Koichas HaTumo, which therefore the Ziyunim, Ziyun literally means a weapon, so the Tagim are like weapons against those Koichas HaTumo. The letters Shatnez itself is something negative, and it contains within the letters of Sotin, and so on and so forth. So you need to have three Tagim on each of those letters. More details about the letters. Amar Rav Ashi, Chazino lehu l'safi davkoni debei Rav. I saw the careful sofrim of the yeshiva of Rav that the chatri lehu l'gage deches. They would chatri the top of the ches. Rashi and Tosfos argue what chatri means. Rashi says the word chatri comes from the word choter, which means a stick. So it means that they would place, there's a diagram in Rashi over here, that when they would write the letter ches, they would put a tag on the end of it. As Gemara is going to explain in a second, the symbolism of it. Tosfos says that the word chatre comes from the word chateteres, which means the hump of camel. So therefore, Tosfos draws out that it means the ches consists of two zayins, or in the Arizal's sound of vav and a zayin, with a hump-like thing, an upside-down V thing connecting them, where you can see the diagram in Tosfos. Most Sofrim nowadays do both. It's actually, there's a bit of a difference in minhag in that between Ashkenazim and Sfaradim, but eventually, I think most Sfaradim have adopted the Ashkenazic style as well. So we actually do both. We have the ches has a hump in the middle, and it also has a tag at the end. So these Sofrim would do that. The Tolulei, the Tarei Dehe, and the second thing Rav Ashi says, I noticed that they would suspend the leg of the hay. The left leg of the hay that we were talking about before was not connected to the body of the letter. Now, he's saying the expert Sofrim would do that. Does that mean the regular Sofrim would not, and it would still be kosher? The Poskim have a huge amount of discussion about that. Maybe the idea is that a hay does not have to have the leg completely separated from the nous, but in order to make it different than a ches, it has to be that it's in the middle rather than all the way at the edge of the letter. Or maybe what it is, it can be slightly connected by like a thin line, but not a thick line as it would be in a ches. Other poskim say that no, it means they actually do have to be separated, and if they're connected, then it's even by the tiniest line, and it's outright possible. All it means is these circles would be careful to make a large space so it's clearly visible as a hay. Balocha is basically like that, so therefore, if a hay is connected, if the leg of a hay is connected at all to the roof, then it becomes possible. So why do they do these details in these letters? Chatri lehu l'gagi the ches, they would make a chatri on the roof of the ches. The tag according to Rashi, the hump according to Tosfos, because that represents it. Kolomar, to represent the idea, Chayhu Beruma Shalom. Hashem lives at the height of the world. In other words, the Ches itself represents Hashem, and the Ches represents the word Chai, and having something sticking up above represents that Hashem lives above, that Hashem lives at the heights of the world above us. The Tolulei L'Kari Behei, and why did they suspend the leg of the hay? The reason is based on the following drasha. Rabbi Yehuda Nesiyah made of Ami. Rabbi Yehuda Nesiyah asked Rabbi Ami, "My dechtiv." What does it mean? A pasuk. We say it every day in davening. Bitru. It's a pasuk from Yeshaya. Bitru v'Hashem adeichad. Trust in Hashem forever and ever. He b'kah Hashem surah lomim. Because in or with kah Hashem is the rock of the world. So what does this pasuk mean? Omaleis. Rabbi Ami says it means. Anybody who attributes his v'tochen to Hashem, anybody who has complete v'tochen in Hashem, that Hashem is his refuge in this world and the next world. In other words, sur literally means a rock, but it means, in other words, like a powerful fortress that a person can be safe in. So therefore, bitchu v'Hashem adayan, trust in Hashem forever and ever, keep a call Hashem, and Hashem will reciprocate and will be sur, will be his rock and his stronghold, olamim, in both worlds. Omoleis, Rabbi Yehuda Nesiyah says, that's not really what I was asking. Ano hochi kokashani. What I was really asking is, maishin adachiv bitcha v'loi ksiv ka. Why does it keep Bikah Hashem Surah Lamin? If it just means your Girosha, first of all, don't need to say the name Ka at all, just say Hashem Surah Lamin. But why Bikah, which sounds like it means in or with Ka, with Yud Ke? Omalei, so Rabbi answers him, Kid Dorosh Rabbi Yehuda Bar Rabbi Loi. The answer is that we have to explain that the way Rabbi Yehuda Bar Rabbi Loi Darshan. Rabbi Yehuda Bar Rabbi Loi is the regular Tana of Yehuda. That this name Yud K represents the two worlds that Hashem created. Olam Hazeh and Olam Haba. Echad behei the echad biyud. One Hashem created with the letter hey and the other with the letter yud. So because with the letters yud and hey, Hashem created surah. Hashem created Meloshin Yotzar Olamim the worlds. Rashi brings here from Sefer Yetzirah, Kabbalah Vikafing. Hashem divided up his name, and from each letter, Hashem made three drops fall, and those three drops formed water, fire, and air, and then the whole world, and then the whole world was created, and earth, and then everything else is created out of those elements. We actually have in Rambam and Shlosh Prakim, we just had yesterday where the Rambam talks about four elements, Perakachav will be in a few days, and so here Rashi is giving the Kabbalah Vikafing underpinning of it from Sefer Yetzirah. Anyway, so Hashem created the world with these letters Yud, the two worlds with these letters Yud and Hey. The any idea in the Olam Haba be Yud, va Olam Hazeh be Hey, im ha Olam Hazeh be Yud, va Olam Haba be Hey. Which is which? We don't know so far from the pasuk which one was created with Hey and which one with Yud. True Oymer, but when we look in Parashas Bereishis, and the pasuk says Ela Sildas at the Mayim va Oretz bihi Baram, it says these are the generations of the heavens and the earth when they were created. And the word bihi baram, atukei bihi baram, ela behei bra. We can break up the word bihi baram to form the expression behei bra. He created them with hay. And in fact, in the Sefer Torah, that hay is smaller than normal, so therefore you can more clearly see that it divides into two words. Hevi olam ha-olam hazeh behei, va-olam ha-bo b'yud. Therefore, that forces you to say that it means this world is created with hay, and olam ha-bo was created with yud. Now, why was this world created with a hay? Why dapka that letter? Because the letter hay represents an achsadra. The letter hay resembles an achsadra, an entryway or porchway where the fourth side is completely open. So you have the hay is closed in on two sides. It's partially closed in on the third side by the left leg. And the bottom is completely open. So it's like an achsadra. Why, in what way is this world like an achsadra? Shekolorotza lost this yetzer. Anybody who wants to leave the world can leave the world. In other words, a person wants to leave the world, that the kind of world that Hashem wants him to be in, and he wants to go off the Tower of Siyah, he wants to go off the Derech, and not follow what Hashem wants of him in the world, he's able to do that. He has the Chiru Chofshis. Shittim Kobetzis brings another point in Rashi as well. The Gemara tells us another point that Rashi adds that Shittim Kobetzis brings. In addition, the Gemara also tells us in Baba Basra that the world is surrounded by three sides and open on the fourth. In context, the Gemara talks about over there about the heavens that's open on the fourth side, and that's why we don't see the sun in the north. It can also refer to the continents. They have the continents to the east and west and south, but there's no continent by the North Pole. Whatever the case, so therefore it's symbolized by the three components of the head. So it's like an achsadra, and if a person wants to fall out and go his own way against what Hashem wants, then Hashem is not going to prevent him from doing that because the person has bechira chofes. Or my time of Talyakare, so then why is the left leg of the hay suspended? And that was how we came into this, because Rav Ashi had said that he had seen the Sofim who do that. If the person does tshuva, then he'll be able to be brought back in, so to speak, through that gap between the leg of the hay and the top of the hay. So the Gemara asks, well, then why can't he just come back in through the same way? He dropped out through the bottom, let him come back in through the bottom. The answer is loy m'skayim milson. He will not be helped by Hashem to do that because he needs extra help because now he has the Yetzer Hara. Now he has the Yetzer Hara in his way. So therefore, Hashem, so to speak, makes a separate entrance for him to be able to bypass, to be able to evade the Yetzer Hara and get back in. And Hashem helps with that. Kedur Shlokish, as the Shlokish says, Domer Shlokish, my dichtiv. What does it mean in the pasuk? In la leitzim hu yovitz. If to the scoffers or the cynics, Hashem will be scoffing and cynical. In other words, if a person wants to be a letz, then Hashem will give him the capability to do that. A letz is basically a person who doesn't take things that are supposed to be serious seriously. So he mocks Yiddishkeit, or he mocks other people, or whatever it is. He's cynical about it. He always looks at the worst possible. He always tries to put the worst possible of framing on something, whatever, that's a letz. So if a person wants to be a letz, then he'll be a letz. But to the humble, Yitin Chayin, Hashem will give grace. What does this mean? Says Rashi. If a person wants to become Tahir, Messiah Oisei, then Hashem will help him. The Alter Rebbe actually pointed out another meaning of it as well. Litahir doesn't just mean to make himself Tahir, it means to make others Tahir. So the Alter Rebbe explained it means also a person is going to work on making other people Tahir. A person is going to work on Nisayim, on Shlichos, and whatever. Hashem will give him special help to be successful with it. On the other hand, Balditame, if a person wants to become Tame, Koschimoy Hashem will open up for him an entrance and not stop him. So we see, in other words, someone who wants to become Tahir needs extra help, and therefore, like so to speak, Hashem has to make a separate doorway for him to be able to evade the Yetzer Hara. So therefore, the shape of the hay symbolizes that. So the Gemara continues, in my time, Islay Torah. Now, why does the letter hay have a tag? Rashi explains that the tag over here means like the tag, and we were talking about before. It has a single tag on the left side of it. Tosfos says that it means the fact that the back of the hay sticks out. A hay is basically shaped like a dalid with an upside down yud suspended in it. But why did it have to be? It could have been shaped like a resh with a yud suspended in it. So why does it have that protrusion on the back? So the protrusion on top according to Rashi and the protrusion on back according to Tosfos means that the word tag or toga literally means a cramp. Means Omer HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Hashem says, Im Choyz Boy, if a person does Shuvah and uses the hay wisely and he comes back in through that hole that Hashem created for him, and he kosher like Kesher, what's supposed to be Kesher, Kodosh, Hashem says, I will tie a crown on his head. So he deserves a crown for becoming a Baal Shuvah and overcoming that natural tendency to drop out and to come back in and to push himself and to make use of Hashem's help to get back in. So Hashem says, I'll give him a crown. So that explains why this world is created with a hay. What about why is Olam HaBa created specifically with the letter Yud? Because the number of tzaddikim in it is relatively few, like a Yud, which is a small letter. We Jews in general are tzaddikim and are bnei olam haba, but on the other hand, compared to the mass of people, even nowadays we have relatively speaking more Jews than many other times in history, and we're still only like 1/400th of all of humanity. As the Torah says, "Kiyatim amahat v'kolam," and we're the least of all nations. So therefore, comparatively, there are relatively few people, all the Jewish people, but compared to the general run of humanity, who make it into olam haba. Why is the Yud's head bent downward, like we talked about before? On Amun Aleph, there's the little protrusion that sticks out on the bottom left corner, meaning it's as if like the head is bent down in that direction. The reason is because the tzaddikim in Olam Haba, their heads are bowed with Neimasein, in German Zalazet, because of their deeds that don't resemble one another. In other words, each person, as the Gemara tells us from Brother Master, is jealous of and feels a jealousy and feels like a fire and a smoke over the fact, why didn't I accomplish the way that other tzaddik did? So in token of that, therefore the yud's head is a little bit bowed downward. Okay, so we'll continue tomorrow, Beis Hashem, with details of dinim of writing Sifrei Torah, Tefillin, and Mezuzas, and various other things related to that.